Gabella Podcast, 102.9 MGK.
Speaking of Def Leppard, they're going into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame this weekend. And if you have plans of going to Vegas this summer, or maybe this will make you have plans to go to Vegas this summer, Def Leppard is going to do a residency at Planet Hollywood. They'll be there August 14th through September 7th. And you get tickets now through Ticketmaster.com. And joining us from Def Leppard is Phil Collin. Hiya, Phil.
Hey there. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you, fella?
I'm great, thank you. All good.
You know, we were talking to Rick Allen not too long ago. I guess you're really looking forward to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Long time coming. So, yeah, what I'm really looking forward to is the performance part. You know, we get to play, like, three songs.
Uh-huh.
So all of that stuff is, we're a live band. So, yeah, that's the fun part.
Speaking of being a live band, there's a story. During the Pyromania tour, you guys used to get wheeled out on stage in laundry baskets.
Because we used to play in the round.
Okay.
You know, like, you'd be in the center of the arena like a boxing ring, and to get there, unless you came out like a boxer, you would have to kind of sneak out there.
Uh-huh.
So we had these laundry carts, and the best one ever, we got Robert Plant from Led Zeppelin to push one of our carts. Me and Rick
what?
Savage in this laundry cart. He said, I'll do it. And he dressed up as, put a pirate thing around his head and a leather jacket and kind of pushed us out, and no one knew.
I was going to ask, did anybody know us? Hey, that pirate looks like Robert Plant.
So he just showed up for the show that night just to push you on stage?
Just that one night, you know, just there. And once you're on there, we just have to wait for the audience would leave. I think that's how we used to do it. Yeah, then we would kind of walk out in robes and stuff. So, yeah, pretty interesting process.
Now, I never realized that Deep Purple was such a huge influence for you.
Yeah, it was the first show I ever went to. I was 14. My cousin took me, and it was in London. It blew me away, and that's the reason I play guitar, really. It done the trick, you know. So Richard Blackmore was smashing the guitar up, and just what he was playing, it was so kind of inspiring. It was just so that done it. So for 2 years, I pestered my mum and dad. I said, I need a guitar, I've got to get one, and finally got one on my 16th birthday.
So you didn't start playing guitar until you were 16?
Right, yeah, absolutely.
Wow. I mean, well, you know, it's typical for a teenager to pick it up, but for someone of your fame and notoriety, I would have just thought you started even younger than that.
No, it was pretty late. You know, a lot of things I kind of do late. I'm a late starter and, you know, kind of getting it rolling out. But, that was good. I knew what I wanted to do, so I had all this stuff in my head. So even before I picked a guitar up, I was like, I've got all this stuff and it's got to come out somewhere. So the guitar was the perfect kind of tool, if you like, to kind of just let all that flow. So that was killer. Great.
Now, being a guitarist, and you know, and I understand Richie Blackmore, how much of a Led Zeppelin fan were you?
Oh, I love Zeppelin as well. I mean, just absolutely. You know, I saw Zeppelin as well when I was a kid, and amazing. The depth of the stuff, you know, they were so cool as well. Loved it.
Now, are these guys, like, if you were with Blackmore or you were with Jimmy Page, right, would you get starstruck, you know, being around them, even though you might even know them?
I was just with Jimmy Page. Just last year, I just put a photo up on Instagram because he was doing this special dragon guitar like he did on the first.
Oh, yeah. I remember hearing about that.
You know, I got to hang with him, and he's just a delight. He's just wonderful, and he's just so cool, and it was just great to hang around with him. But same deal, you know, Pete Townsend and Roger Daltrey.
Mm-hmm.
We've done some shows with them in South America, and again, it's just a joy, you know, because they inspired us so much, you know, growing up. And it is weird seeing them in real life, you know, when you're talking to them, you go, well, I remember, again, without sounding too name-droppy, you know, we was doing a stereo album, and Mick Jagger was next door doing a solo album, and we got to hang, and we got to talk, and me and him having a coffee up the back, and I'd be talking away, like, to this English guy that was, like, really interesting, and I kept forgetting that it was Mick Jagger. You'd go, oh, my God, I'm talking to Mick Jagger. So, yes, in answer to your first question, I'm still a little bit fanboy. It does have an effect.
As I said to you, Rick was on the air with us not too long ago, and we've had him on the air a number of times, and I finally got around to asking him, hey, look, you know, I wanted to ask him about, you know, losing the arm, and we had that conversation numerous times, but then I started asking him about, okay, one-arm drummer jokes, and then he just started rolling with them, right? But being on the other side of this, when Rick lost his arm, what was it like for you guys? Because he told us what it was like for him to rejoin the band. What was it like for you guys when you found out that happened?
Well, me and Steve Clark were in Paris with our girlfriends. We had two girlfriends that lived in Paris, and we were hanging with them. And we got this phone call from Peter Mensch, who was our manager at the time, and said, Rick's had this accident and it severed his arm. And we're like, well, what do you mean severed his arm? He said it's cut off. And we're like, well, you know, you just think it was a gash or something that. When we found out really what had happened, it was like you couldn't really compute. We were a lot younger then, and we were still a little naive to stuff, and we couldn't really compute. It didn't really kind of register until we saw him. I remember me and Steve went and visited him in hospital, and he was so positive. He said, look, I'm going to play drums. I'm going to use this left foot instead of the arm. And we were kind of still wigging out about the fact that he was just wrapped up like a mummy, and one of his arms was missing. And there was more to it than that. You know, they tried to reattach it, and it got infected, and then had to amputate. So it was like kind of insult to injury, really.
Right.
You know, made it even worse. But, you know, he came out. He's got that kind of British resolve that we all had, that we inherited from our parents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the World War II, you know, my mum and dad were in London, and, you know, air raid shelters, and you know, the Nazis are trying to blow everything up. It was kind of weird, actually, even them hearing them say that. But I think because of that, you know, adapted something from our parents. We kind of had that. And with Rick, he absolutely, that was the thing. You know, it was like, yeah, it's tis bar flesh wound. That, you know, Monty Python thing where he just cut your arms and legs off. And he's like falling over on his teeth. So there's definitely a bit of truth to that. So, that was it.
Well, Phil, thank you so much. And, oh, by the way, Chris Epting says hi.
Oh, brilliant. I love Chris. He's just great.
You take care.
You too. Thank you.
Classic Rock 102.9 MGK.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.